You're back with Total Information AM with Tom Ackerman. I'm Megan Lynch. Officials coordinating disaster relief in the wake of Hurricane Helene continue to fight misinformation, saying it's creating fear and is hurting efforts to provide assistance. Joining us now, Dr. Michael Spikes, journalism professor at Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern University. Thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
When you look at this, does it appear that the mis and disinformation that we're seeing right now is worse maybe than some past catastrophic events?
Well, I don't know if I would say it's worse, but I would say that it highlights the tactics that can be used and the ways that it can really affect people that are in a stringent situation right now. They're in a situation where they're fearful. There's a lot of uncertainty about the future, and it just makes them prime candidates for being susceptible to this kind of mis and disinformation that you see being spread.
What would you tell us about how challenging it is to try to counter false claims once they're out there?
Well, at the moment, I think what we have is a sort of confluence of things that come together. One being the technologies that connect people together directly with creators of different kinds of messages without there being somewhat of a middleman. Sometimes we refer to this as a disintermediation of the messages that are put out there. And what that refers to is it's the taking out of that middleman. Like in particular, if you use your news program or news station as an example, you have reporters and you have editors. Your reporters go out and report, go out and do interviews and go out and collect information. You shape it into a story. And then your editors make choices about what should be kept in, what should be left out to make sure that it's relevant for the audience and to make sure it's as credible as it can be. We have a lack of that in these sort of disintermediated spaces, such as social media, where you have, again, you have creators of messages and media being directly connected to their audience members. So there are very little ways to sort of filter, I would say, like pre-filter that information. So it's really up to the individuals to make those decisions for themselves. And again, like I mentioned earlier, when you're in situations where there's a lot of uncertainty about what may happen, and really what you need is just a clear answer of what you should do next or what should be going on, it makes you all the more susceptible to purveyors that may be out there that will spread false information for their own gain.
When we look at that misinformation and even conspiracy theories, how much of it sometimes does have an element of truth, which makes it even harder for those individuals in crisis to really sort it out?
Right. Yeah. One of the tactics that's used by purveyors of disinformation, and to be clear, when I talk about disinformation, I mean false information that's shared with the express intent to mislead people. What they'll do is they take advantage of the fact that these that they can wrap up a piece of information that might have a kernel of truth. And that kernel of truth might be, in the case of some of the disinformation that we saw coming out in relation to the hurricane damage, and that being that it seems to be really the relief efforts seem to be kind of slow for maybe some of the residents, particularly in Western North Carolina. And they may be saying, why is it taking so long for me to get access to some of the relief efforts that I'm hearing are out there? And you have a person that might say, yeah, you know why these things are being so slow? It's because of these things, regardless of the fact of whether they know this to be the truth or not, regardless of whether or not they've gone out and talked to officials, they've just sort of made things up. So again, they can take this sort of feeling in the community, again, that feeling of uncertainty about what's coming, and then they take advantage of that and then just sort of insert pieces of information that may or may not be true to just help people. They just fill in that sort of void of information.
Now, of course, Dr. Spikes, we have had incidents in the past where disaster response has not been stellar. You know, looking at the role of journalists in this, what questions should we be asking right now about those recovery efforts to make sure we are presenting what is really happening on the ground?
Well, I think in particular for journalists, the way that they're going to approach any piece of information they get from different types of sources, they're going to first ask themselves the questions of who is it I'm talking to and how does this person know this thing? when you go to an official that may give you a piece of information about why things are moving so slowly, the journalist's next question may be, well, how do we know that if the official comes out and says, like, we're trying to work as hard as we can, then journalist's follow-up question will be, well, tell us, give us some examples of some of the things that are happening. And then also that journalist, when taking the statements from that official and then crafting it into a story, they then know that context is really important to be added to that. So they may ask questions such as, how has this official acted in the past? How has this agency acted in the past? How could that information that we have about the past actions of this agency or this particular official help us to understand and maybe responsibly predict what their next steps may be? So those sort of things that are part of the journalist's, arsenal of skills that I think consumers of information don't always have because they're not always engaged in these kind of conversations regularly, are really, really important for us to draw upon. So I think it's really, really important for journalists to be sure to always pull on those strings of asking the questions of how, who is this person I'm talking to? How does this person know this? What is the evidence that they can bring to me to help me understand this better? And then what context is needed in order to help my audience members, again, better understand the situation that's going on right now?
Well, in talking to our listeners right now, they're probably listening to that, and it can be exhausting to do all that fact checking. So, how do listeners protect themselves from propaganda, misinformation, disinformation, and conspiracy theories when we're talking about big emotional events like a major disaster?
So I agree with you that it does take a lot of effort to do these things. But I do think that we have to take up these questions regularly, and we have to take them up as a regular practice. If we engage with these sort of practices regularly and do ask, again, question and bring a healthy dose of skepticism to the information that we get from lots of different sources, it won't become so effortful. Because now, in this sort of, again, you heard me refer to this earlier, there's these disintermediated spaces of getting information. It is now up to the consumer to do that kind of work that we used to shirk off to journalists and other media creators who then built up trust with us. Now we're trying to build up trust with the millions of people and millions of voices that are out there on social media and other disintermediated platforms.
Dr. Spikes, really appreciate your time with us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
That is Michael Spikes, journalism professor at McGill School of Journalism at Northwestern University.